Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hi, everybody. This is Lou Nash.
And this is Ella Gordon-Letty.
And together, we welcome you to the redesign of everything.
Where we will be talking to the global change makers, the designers, and the practitioners who are helping to redesign a better future for us all. We'll be giving you not only the inspiration, but also the tools to redesign your world for the better.
Design is the single most important force in building a thriving future for us all. A future that's more regenerative, more resilient, and more circular by design. So let's share these stories and insights gleaned from our guests at the front line of this transformation.
Thank you for being here and for listening, because together we really can redesign everything.
Today's guest has degrees in musical composition, philosophy, politics, and economics, which meant they were not obviously lined up for a career in FMCG category review management, but studying in Otago creating a fondness for spates that led John Steiner to apply for Lion's graduate program. And he's ended up staying with the company for almost 20 years, working his way up through various roles spanning sales, business development, retail, category and revenue, as well as being engaged with multiple customer groups and partner organisations. He is now applying his end-to-end knowledge of the business, big picture thinking, technical expertise and an innate desire to make the world a better place in his current role as General Manager of Lion's Accelerated Change Team. Now, Lion has been making some bold moves in sustainability, social responsibility, and the circularity of their products in recent years, with the vision to be a force for good, championing sociability and helping people to live well. In 2020, they became Aotearoa's first large-scale Toitū Carbon Zero certified beverage company. In 2022, John led a team from Lion's Accelerated Change Department through X-Labs, New Zealand's first circular economy training program, working with us at Circularity to design innovative solutions. The challenge that Lion brought into the X-Labs week-long design sprint was to ask how they might design out a sky tower's worth of packaging waste every year in New Zealanders' purchase, consumption and disposal of beverages in order to protect our communities, our coastlines, forests and land. Now, New Zealanders send 12.59 million tonnes of waste to landfill each year, and much of its materials could be recycled, reused or repurposed. So it's great they've been taking on this challenge. So without further ado, welcome to the redesign of everything, John Steiner.
Great. Awesome. Excited to be here.
Awesome to have you. Where are you calling from today, John?
Today I am calling from my bedroom in lovely Havelock North.
Awesome. And what's the weather there in Havelock North?
Today she was started off with blue skies, a little bit of cirrocumulus clouds, chilled off a little bit now, nighttime, dark, but, you know, warm in the house, so all good.
Oh, that's lovely. Well, it's freezing here in Tamaki Makaurau, middle of winter, although I think we've taken the turn towards spring. So at the start of each interview, we like to ask our guests, what actually does the redesign of everything mean for you?
Yeah, quite a lot different to what it did if you'd asked me that question 6 or 9 months ago, I think, would be the first thing. I suppose what's really been the realisation over the last 6 to 9 months or so is the need of New Zealand and the world to make a real paradigm shift in our use of energy and raw materials. You know, so that from going from wasting resources to reusing resources and how fast we need to make that change. I don't think of it so much as redesigning the existing solution, but of thinking about how you'd best meet the same customer need you currently meet, but starting with a completely blank sheet of paper, and that those best solutions you think of will probably turn your existing capabilities to new uses, as that'll speed up the pace of change and lower the costs. But it's always exciting to start with a clean slate. So that's probably what I've learnt that the redesign of everything means.
Yeah, that's really awesome. And if there's anyone designed to go fast, it's you and the team at Lion, the Accelerated Change Team. How did that team all come about? You know, what was the purpose of it? How long has it been running? And what's your role within it?
Yep. So we're a small team of five, which I lead. We operate as a separate function outside of Lion's core beverage business. So we just hang on at the end there. How we got started really was due to our country director, Craig Baldy. So when Craig started his current role a few years ago, Lyon sort of sent him off to finishing school at Harvard. And his key learning when he came back from that time at Harvard was that to really make meaningful change happen, regardless of what you're trying to change in a big business, you know, that change is usually end-to-end in nature, and it's usually quite big, and it's, you know, therefore pretty hard. So you really have to dedicate resource to it. So that's kind of how we got formed, is myself and a couple of other colleagues were pretty routinely bending Craig's ear about the need to make significant changes to how Lyon operates if we really wanted to win in the market. So when he got back, he pretty much called the three of us up, said, "G'day, you now all co-lead a team together, grab a few people, work out what you think we should do," and then he actually let us do it, which is pretty cool. So we started with sort of some significant simplification of core business projects, and then after a couple of years of success doing that, with a dedicated team, I suppose, leading those large internal sort of end-to-end projects, the purpose of ACT now has shifted a little bit to become more externally orientated, but still with the same key learnings of, you know, you need a dedicated team of people to make change happen. So our purpose these days is to lead inspired, transformational, sustained advantage. And in practice, that means we try to work out how Lyon could utilise its existing capabilities in a different way to create new sources of value. So kind of if you think about it like Lego bricks, I've got kids, so I often think of Lego bricks. You know, you buy a pack of Lego bricks that are, they give you some instructions on how you can use those bricks to make beverages. But with those same bricks organized in a different way, you could make something completely different. So that's kind of what our idea is. The other thing we do is try to be really externally connected. So we are scanning the horizon to see what capabilities other organizations possess that could be really useful to our core business. And if we identify some of those, think about how we could bring those into our business.
Sounds really cool. I wish I'd had a chance to be part of a team like that when I was working corporate side, John. What I'm also really fascinated is about the amount of discipline you guys work, you know, and how you're structured as a team, but also how the work flows through. Can you share a little bit about that?
Yeah, so that's also been one of the journeys we've been on. So when we talk about capabilities we see outside of our business, what we've been doing over the last few years, I suppose, is adopting agile practices that started in technology firms and that are really disciplined, and the key principle of which are that you're constantly adding value. So you're always thinking about what is it that we're going to achieve in the fairly short period ahead of us, and what's the value that we're going to add to the stakeholder at the end of that period. And so we run a really rigorous and cyclical scheme of ceremonies, where every quarter we're setting ourselves goals, which break down into 6-week goals, which then get broken down to 2-week goals, which then get broken down into, you know, tasks that we achieve every 2 days. And that constant rhythm and focus on delivering value each and every day is what I think speeds us all up. And to do that, we have Jody Lockheed in our team, who is our chief cracker of the whip, and who organises us and ensures that we, you know, we put the time up front into planning so that we're really clear about what we're going to achieve, and then make sure, you know, that we are measuring ourselves almost every day, but every 2 days, to make sure we're doing the little things that add up to the slightly bigger things that add up to the big things.
What excites me most about when you first shared this with me, John, and when we started working together, was what a lot of our listeners are very concerned about, and we know a lot of citizens in general are very concerned about, is, you know, the looming gloom, if you like, of climate change and some of these big issues that we're facing as people of the earth. And so what excited me most about when I met you was, and the team, was this idea that not only the depth and breadth and scale that Lyon brings as a business, but also the discipline that you guys have brought in terms of being able to move from a problem to a solution with discipline and with rigor. And if, you know, you guys are working on these big challenges, we have some hope in it. I'm really interested to hear what were some of the drivers for your team to zero in on impact and this idea of a circular economy. Almost, you know, what were you guys kind of chatting about before we met?
Yeah, yeah. You know, one of Lyon's 5 strategies is to be a force for good. And the way that we define that is to demonstrate brave and enduring environmental leadership. So when I first stepped into my current role with its current remit, you know, you sort of had some strategic cover, as it were, to explore sustainability in its general terms. And at that point, my understanding of sustainability was pretty general. Thankfully, I've worked with a guy who's in my team, Nick Russell, for several years now, who is our self-proclaimed resident techno-hippie. And he is amazingly knowledgeable and passionate about all things environmental. And over the years, every time we had a beer, which in our line of work is reasonably frequent, you know, he'd be in my ear, furthering my education, I suppose, about the need to make environmental change. And because he's so passionate about it, he'd have 3,700 different ways that Lion could do something in that space. So my interest in particular had been peaks, and Lion was starting to make some quite strong commitments in the language it uses around environmental leadership. And then really, the more you learnt, the bigger the radical nature of the shift everyone in the world needs to make becomes obvious. And from a business perspective, you know, when the whole economy around the world has to change so that we don't all get burnt to a crisp, you sort of have to figure there has to be massive commercial opportunity in all of that disruption. So it just seems like amazingly fertile territory where there's a great genius at the end opportunity. The whole world's economy has to change. That means there's going to be lots of disruption. There's got to be some commercial opportunity you can find. And while you're doing that, the whole point of that disruption is to make the world a better place. So what a great way to, I suppose, go hunting for in a way that you feel that you're really making a difference to the world and the company you work for.
Yeah, definitely. And obviously our paths started crossing around the X Labs program and getting that in market. And I know you and I had some very initial conversations around how you guys could get up to speed and move into the space really quickly. Obviously, you were already kind of working in this design thinking and prototyping and validating way, but how could you bring kind of circular economy? So, you know, we were really thrilled when you guys signed up to the X Labs Learn program, and you actually became the first team, the business team of six people in Aotearoa to actually complete the online course and all become certified in designing for a circular economy. How did you find the course, and you know, what did you guys get out of that as a team?
It was great. So X Labs Learn, as a way to get introduced to the idea of circular economy, particularly when you're in spaces where I'd say we didn't know what we didn't know. So it was a fantastic introduction for that. That it was self-guided and self-learned also just meant we could approach it at our own pace. Given that, you know, we don't have a day job, we just run projects, meant we could do it pretty quickly, which was great. I think what I appreciated about the program too, and I know the activity that the team, I think, got the most out of too, was when we actually started to break things apart and you really saw how the world actually makes things. So it's great to learn the theory and, you know, there's some wonderful parts to it and videos explaining the circular economy and how that circular economy gets started. But when you started to pull everyday objects apart and then realise how bloody hard it is to pull them apart, how they break when you do pull them apart, how the, you know, the symbols about recycling are on the inside of the product where you can't actually see them, you did really get a great sense of how poorly designed things really are for the objectives that we actually need to be designing things against. So, you know, it was a great practical way for us to start to understand, I suppose, the current situation and the basics of designing for a circular economy.
So John's referring to an exercise, I think, in almost the second or third module where we ask people to kind of go into their homes or their offices and find an object to deconstruct and pull apart and actually work out how many materials are in that product, what could happen to it at the end, and then consider how they might redesign it to be better, for greater reuse, for greater repurpose. So I can't quite remember what you deconstructed. Was it a remote control or something, John?
Yeah, I had a Wi-Fi band expander that my dog had chewed the ears off.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was like literally I was like getting, you know, to try and open the thing, I was literally getting tools out, you know, of the toolkit, which to be fair is a, you know, I'm a soft hands computer office worker, so I don't get the toolkit out very often, which might have been half the problem. But, you know, I couldn't crack the flipping thing open, you know, and then once you did it all, you know, it was all molded plastic and things broke everywhere. And it was quite eye-opening, I suppose, in that sense to think, God, if this was broken and had I wanted to return it, it was literally impossible to do so.
Yeah. And why there's been such a call for the right to repair movement through Europe, but now in New Zealand through Consumer NZ's work. If anyone's interested in checking out that, Consumer NZ has just released a really interesting report around the right to repair in New Zealand and what actually happens when you return things for repair that you can't do it yourself. So, yeah, a lot of it is a mindset shift. One of the other big exercises we did with you was map the system, John, where we, you know, mapped out how beer gets made. And we heard from you guys around, you know, where products get sourced and ingredients, and then all the way through to how it gets used and how beer gets made, all the way through to the engagement with customers and stakeholders. We managed to do that one in person, didn't we?
Yeah, that was great. That was awesome. We went out to Little Creatures, managed to sneak in some pizzas and beers while we were there, which no doubt helped with mapping the system. And it was a great couple of days.
Yeah. So how did you guys kind of land on addressing packaging waste for your challenge that you brought into XLabs Live? What were some of the factors that played into that decision for you?
Yeah. So, you know, when we mapped that system with you guys, you know, when we'd gone from raw ingredients growing through to sourcing packaging and all the way to consumption and waste management, there were heaps of opportunities. So it wasn't that we were like, oh, gosh, there's nothing we can do here. There were heaps of different opportunities. When we were trying to determine what was the right one, we sort of tried to create some criteria against which to assess them. And that criteria was kind of first and foremost, like, was anyone in our business obviously responsible for improving sustainability in that particular area of opportunity? And so was someone already on it, basically? So if someone was already on it and we felt that, and they, you know, probably wasn't the right space for us. Particularly what was interesting when we were looking at all these different opportunities, we were looking at them and going, well, if we solve that particular problem, what other upstream or downstream benefits might solving that problem have to solve other business or customer issues? So particularly when we were thinking about packaging, and the more we thought about, well, if we can reduce waste here, what does that benefit have for our customers? And what would that then do for the amount of credits we have and the amount of aged stock or packaging repacks we have to make with merchandisers, or a whole bunch of customer experience type benefits we could have from actually just using less packaging equals less issues kind of approach. That was quite interesting to think of. So that sort of criteria around what other benefits rather other than the direct ones would this have. And then probably the last couple too were around, one, is it big? So, you know, one of the key things about this move to a circular economy is we've got to make it in a hurry. And it's lovely to have lots of interesting ideas, but if they're not actually going to make a really big impact, they're not actually going to move the dial or help move the dial in a meaningful way. So it really had to have a big environmental impact.
Yeah, and I think that's another thing that I really enjoyed working with you guys was the ambition. You weren't afraid to go after something really big, really tangible, really challenging and complex, and take on that problem. I think it's part of the confidence that you guys have built up as a team to work together on these things.
Yeah, it's much more fun when you work on something big, to be perfectly honest, and that's part of the challenge, I think, that I like. When you have something big and challenging, the answer's not always very clear, which is part of the stimulation, I think, of working on those sorts of problems, but it also makes it a bit more meaningful as well. You know, if you can crack that nut, you'll feel pretty bloody proud of yourself, I think. So, you know, I think having a bit of ambition in that space is good. And I think as well, that helps later on as well when you're trying to engage people. So, you know, all of this stuff and shifting to a circular economy is hard. Like you asked, it's a paradigm shift. It's not an evolution of what we currently do. It's a transformation or a revolution in how things need to be done. And so when if your ambition is too small, I think it's the story isn't necessarily compelling to those that you might need to engage, ask things of along the way. Whereas if your ambition is sufficiently large, you can have paint a really compelling vision to them that's quite emotionally engaging. That's the benefit of a big change. Then you've got to ultimately follow through with it, which is, you know, you may have created a noose for your own neck, but that's kind of some of the thrill of the ride as well. So I do think that having that sense of ambition, though, is actually a good thing in order to help you craft a compelling story.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a really good thing considering we're all staring down the barrel of a really big challenge and we've all got to work together on it. So, yep. You know, on that storytelling piece, I love the analogy that your team came up with around how much packaging waste goes to landfill. You know, you identified that entire Sky Tower's worth of waste goes to landfill each year from packaging. It's such a great visual aid to help people understand the magnitude of the problem. I'd love to hear your thoughts further on this, like how we can best communicate sustainability and circularity efforts in order to help people understand their choices, you know, whether it's as a consumer or as customers, and help bring them on that journey, because I know that's something that you're actively engaged in.
Yeah. So Lion has done a lot of research by a variety of methods into consumer in particular attitudes towards sustainability. And certainly when we set out on our solution, as we started to think about it, you know, I assumed we'd take a pretty rational approach to communicating circularity or sustainability benefits to consumers. Should have known better. Has spent a lot of my time in shop marketing and know it's, you know, people think.
They don't do what they say, do they, John?
No, they don't do what they say. And they, you know, we're not actually rational decision makers when we're buying stuff at the supermarket. We're emotional decision makers.
Absolutely.
And what's most important to them in the hierarchy of needs in FMCG, when you're wandering down the supermarket aisle, is, you know, quality of the product, how much it is, how convenient it is to grab it. So, you know, the most important insight we've had is, you know, consumers say they care, but they don't act that way. And so when it comes to the purchase decision, sustainability isn't actually that high up the pecking order. So what that means is then, you know, for product design, you've got to find that genius of the end. So it's got to be a product that actually meets the core needs of the consumer or the customer better than the current options and is more circular. And sort of communicating is the same way. Actually, you've got to focus your messaging primarily on how your product better delivers against core consumer or customer needs. And the sustainability angle is the secondary cherry message on top. So it's kind of, if you think about it, we only get the opportunity to create new consumer and customer habits that are more circular once we've actually got them to buy the first more circular product. So we've got to focus on getting them to buy the first one. And if then they like that first one more than the one they currently use, then they'll end up with more circular habits. So it is, I think, really comes back to what, you know, in an FMCG context, marketers do anyway, is focus on designing a product that better meets consumer and customer needs. But when you're designing that product, make sure it's more circular at the same time. Then if you just do what you always do, you will end up giving customers and consumers to choose the right product.
And then it becomes a habit, you know.
And then it becomes a habit.
That we return and refill our products, it becomes a norm. So the communication of that can become more subtle. Yeah, I think there's probably a lot of FMCG marketers going, aha, I get you. I've had this challenge out there too, around which message we lead with. And definitely, you know, we know that it's a really competitive market out there and you have to be more desirable, regardless of being more sustainable. You still have to be a more desirable product to get consumers to grab it off the shelf. John, just in terms of communicating the challenge and the problem that you've tackled in terms of packaging waste, I'm really interested to hear about the role of measurement and how you use data to really bring people on board to understand the importance of this problem.
I'm a bit of a data junkie, and facts are super important. And Lions are pretty, and I think FMCG in general, are pretty data-driven businesses in terms of their decision-making. And certainly what was really useful for us when we started chatting to you guys, we were like, well, how can we demonstrate that something is better than something else? And the classic one in our business has been, you know, we have kegs and we can't, yeah, everyone knows intrinsically that they're better for the environment than packaged beer, but like how much better? Like, is it 5% better? Is it 10% better? Is it 30% better? And what does being X percent better actually mean? Like, what's the real waste impact, or what is the real emissions impact, or water usage impact, or what's the real impact that percentage is meaning? And current ways of measuring things, so you do these life cycle analyses, and they're really good if you're an environmental scientist, because they spit out sort of 10 measures, quite scientific measures, and they'll give you reds and greens. And but for non-scientific people like myself, and particularly when you're trying to engage stakeholders, you know, you might end up with two life cycle analyses, both of which have, so you've got 10 measures for each of two products, and each has five reds and five greens, but they've got different five reds and a different five greens for each product. And so it's really hard to say that this is better than that with that life cycle analysis process. What was great is you introduced us to the CTI tool, the Circular Transition Indicators tool. And what's fantastic about that is we can use all the data that we currently capture through our environmental measurement and all the information we have about all of our packaging materials and the ingredients that go into our beer, et cetera. And we can input that all into this tool. And then through a system of calculation that's inbuilt into the tool, it then gives us one number at the end. So it tells us that something has a
a circular score of 70 or a circular score of 90. And that's always a score out of 100. So it's nice and easy for me to be able to say to someone, this has a circular score of 90, whereas this product has a circular score of 70. So this product is considerably better than this one. And what that really means is that this many kilos of waste, once you scale that product up to how much of it we sell over the course of the year, the difference between those two scores means that if we could make this product have a circular score that was like this product, we would remove this much waste from landfill, or we would reduce this much virgin materials being used and extracted from the earth, or we would reduce this much energy consumption, or we would reduce, and you know, in future versions which are coming, we would reduce our emissions by this much. And so it's really one simple number we can use to engage stakeholders that everyone can easily grasp, but also it tells you some really tangible numbers that you can get to in terms of kilos of waste or energy kilojoules reused, and you can even put a cost on that. So that's I think, been the real value of measurement and getting to a nice, simple measurement that has been fantastic in engaging people in our business with facts and us able to actually put some real numbers on the things that we knew, but put some real facts around them now that we can hold on to.
Now more than ever, businesses are being forced to rethink how they operate, and Circularity is here to help. We run workshops that bring your organisation, industry or community together.
You may wish to gain an introduction to the circular economy opportunity, have a masterclass on creative closed-loop systems for your materials, or think about how you can change behaviours, develop circular business models, or even explore potential impact territories for your brand. Our facilitators at Circularity design and deliver immersive experiences that defy convention and demand engagement.
You find the time and we will make the most of it. We build capability, unlock new value, and co-design an extraordinary future together. Reach out via our website, circularity.co.nz.
Can you tell us about some of the benefits of going on the circular journey that you've had and your team has had in terms of staff engagement from the leadership team through the juniors? What were some of the ways that you've engaged the wider business on this?
Yeah, when we started out, we had a bit of an idea. And you know what's been great is fortunate to have Justin Searle on our team, who used to lead our design team and as a one woman creative agency. So what's been really great is we've turned what could have been death by a gazillion PowerPoints into a nice snippy little 2-minute animated video to kind of show, you know, here's what we think the future could be. And I think that's been the best tool we've had to bring people on the journey. They can visualise it. They can see what the future will be like. They can see the benefits of it to consumers and to customers. They can see the benefits to the planet, and it all is in a nice snippy 2 minutes with some jingly music in the background. And I think so, just again, it's that compelling storytelling, but that's been the piece that's really got people emotionally engaged in it and excited, I suppose, about what we're thinking about. And that's from anyone we've shown that to, be that internal or external. So again, that piece about developing a compelling story in a compelling manner, I think, has been really great and engaging. And then it's, I suppose, being disciplined in your follow-up and your follow-through. So, again, we've got a very structured approach to how we work, and part of that is actually how we engage our stakeholders. So we are repetitively with, you know, my leader, keeping them up to date every 2 weeks on how we have progressed with the other senior stakeholders across our business. We're engaging them with some creative content every 6 weeks to how we're progressing. We're promoting and engaging that on Yammer, which is kind of like our internal Facebook across the entire business, every 6 weeks on how we're progressing and what we're up to and what's coming next. So there's that constant communication. I think that really builds that engagement over time and keeps the motivation high, and also just the excitement, I suppose, in the project going throughout the business, and also just acts as an inform, because you know, for big, large change projects, there'll be people that we don't even know that we'll need on the project at some point in time in the future, and we don't even know who they are or what they do yet. But just by casting the net a little bit wide, at least they know what we're up to, and when we come knocking at some point in the future, they won't be taken completely by surprise. That's kind of how we've been approaching it, to try and build motivation and excitement, and certainly the reaction's been great. Like, Kiwis all like to think that they're really sustainable, and I think that desire is genuine. And so people are really enthused by the idea that we can make a big difference by reducing lots of packaging waste. And certainly when you tell them some of the numbers, some of the facts that we've uncovered about our packaging waste, and I love, you know, if you ever got a bar at work, again, one of the benefits of working for a beverage company is when you're having a beer and you start telling people about some of the things we've learned with the product that they're holding in their hand, and, you know, actually you can't recycle that one because it's got this sort of packaging on it, or do you know where that has to go to be recycled? Do you know what proportion of those things actually can be recycled or are recovered in New Zealand, or all those sorts of facts? When you're sharing those with people, their eyes sort of tend to pop out of their heads sometimes. So, you know, the more of that sort of anecdotal facts and figures that we've managed to share and spread around, the more people are like, man, yeah, we've got to do something about that, which I think is really probably the sentiment that comes out the most once you start talking about a sky tower's worth of waste, as people go, oh, I don't like that. That makes me feel uncomfortable. You know, I don't want to create that amount of waste. So we should definitely be doing something to reduce that.
Yeah, I could definitely see you guys walked the line between helping people fall in love with the problem and sharing the solution. And I think we see that as really, really key because there are a lot of priorities that businesses are juggling, and you have to elevate and keep these kind of problems front and centre, yeah, because, you know, businesses can be drawn into lots of different directions. So kudos to you for keeping this problem front and centre.
The other part of it too is it is easy, I think, for businesses to get distracted by, you know, how am I going to make some money this week or this year? And I do think that you know, it's great that Lion's got this great strong strategy of being a force for good and leading brave environmental change. And so I think as well, being able to really create that sense of, God, we've got to do something about that, and then remind everyone that we've got a strategy that says we have to lead the sort of change, I think as well is really critical to keeping it as not a nice to do, but a must do on sort of the business's priorities. Having that language and making sure you, to some extent, challenge and remind the business of what they've committed to the whole time too is also really important.
So it's not just a line that's in a report that gets filed away once a year. It actually has some life to it in the day-to-day and future pipeline work.
Absolutely, yeah.
Hey, I'm interested to know what was the most surprising thing for you and the team about your X-Labs journey, and we're sort of looking at the circular economy and the problem of packaging waste. Where did that journey take you? What surprised you?
Yeah, so how we got into it right at the start, as we started to think about sustainability in general terms, is I just thought about every person that I'd ever had some sort of remotely sustainability-orientated conversation with, and then rang them back up to try and pick it back up. And what was great about that is, you know, they then would say, well, you want to talk to this person, so then you talk to that person, and then they'd pass you on to another person, and you'd learn some more. And that's ultimately how I got introduced to yourself. And what was, I suppose, surprising but also super invigorating about that process was learning really how collaborative we all need to be in order to solve these massive, big, systemic problems, but also how collaborative everyone is in the circular community at trying to help each other solve those problems and join the dots and find better solutions, or find the person that knows how to solve that particular bit or is an expert at that particular part. And so I suppose that was a bit of a surprise to me, but it was also just super invigorating too. So when you get into it, to meet so many great people trying to do so many great things and help other people do great things.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome having a group of people. We call them the Coalition of the Willing, don't we? When we all get in a room and work on problems together to help kind of feed off each other, because I think you do need to have some wing people beside you along the way of creating great change to inspire you, and in turn for you to inspire them, to motivate them to keep going.
Yeah, absolutely. There's only one downside to it, is that you go, oh my God, that's so interesting over there. And then you start thinking about that problem and you don't think about your own one for a wee bit because you just get so caught up in something else. But it's my own curious magpie problem, so I'll deal with that. But yeah, it is super invigorating and super exciting.
Yeah, I'm a bit of a curious magpie on other people's problems too, John. In fact, Bree, my co-founder of X-Labs here, and I, one of the exercises we bedded into the program was you know, two businesses side by side, one has to share their problem, the that they're working on with the other business, and that other business has to come back with solutions for it. So taking on someone else's problem and seeing what you would do, walking in their shoes.
Yeah.
Hey, Lion's a real market leader in New Zealand's beverage industry with a great opportunity to influence change. What do you see as the future of fast-moving goods and beverages for the next kind of, I don't even want to say 10 to 20 years. I want to say like 5 years, because I feel like 5 years, it'll look completely different. You know, where to next for the industry? What are your hopes?
Yeah, so, you know, if you guys kind of even think about the name of the industry, fast-moving consumer goods, It's kind of a poster child for a linear consumption-based economy.
Really is.
Make, buy, use, throw out at high speed, which is kind of the opposite values of sharing and reuse espoused by a circular economy. And I suppose what I've been learning is if you think about the current industry, you know, many of our goods or their component parts or materials are imported. Large amounts of our recovered materials have to be exported to be recycled. And freight costs are in. Yeah, when we import things, you know, there's emissions costs, emissions associated with that. The costs of importing are increasing. Services unreliable, and those costs of importation or export are likely to continue as ultimately carbon pricing policies come into fruition around the world. So you kind of see this future where if we continue to import everything and export everything to be recycled, just from purely business perspective, like costs are going to go through the roof and you're not doing anything to make the world better. And your supply chain, I think, will be increasingly volatile. So really what that means is you'd love to see all FMCG producers really thinking about how we can ultimately lower costs and increase the resilience of our supply chains by sourcing and making more products locally here in New Zealand. They're really focusing the product design when you're thinking about it from a sustainability perspective, not on how can we recycle the materials that we're using, but actually focus on reducing the amount of actual materials used in a product. So how do we actually reduce the amount of packaging we need to use versus work out how to make it more recyclable, which I think is probably a bit of the current focus. By producing things locally, getting rid of the need to freight things around the world, and making things more reusable versus recyclable, and therefore having to export goods that we import back out of the seas to be recycled, you know, those are the ways that ultimately we create nice, tight, circular value chains. The smaller the circle is, the more resilient that chain will be, and the more circular the circle, funnily enough, the lower cost the product will be, I think, over time. So I hope that's kind of where we might get to.
Yeah, my hope is for that too. We definitely see that reusable kind of refill market really growing, not only around the world, but here in Aotearoa. And we've seen, obviously, a number of people make plays in that space, but often they're the only one in that industry or within that category doing that. And that tends to be at a high cost for them because they're the ones responsible for getting it back, for doing those reverse logistics if they can, and then doing the refills. So hopefully we do end up seeing a future like that in Aotearoa.
Wouldn't that be great?
So I'm really interested if you could inspire other change makers out there by giving them one piece of advice. What would you want them to know? What would you wish that you had known earlier in your career, maybe when you were that Otago student about to take on that graduate program? What would you like to pass on?
I think the biggest thing that I've probably learned in the last 5 or 6 years is don't overthink it. So, you know, have a vision of where you want to go, but you don't need to have the detail. You can't actually have a detailed plan that's going to be a straight line that you're going to follow. So know roughly where you're heading and then just get bloody started. And you'll have confidence that you'll figure out the intermediary steps as you go along. Because the one thing I've learned is that if you try and plot everything out from A to Z, by the time you get to D, the world's changed anyway, so Z might not be the right thing to do. You've kind of got to know roughly where you're heading, and so that you might end up at X instead of Z, and you probably didn't go through all the letters of the alphabet in a straight line to get to X. You went back and forwards a wee bit, side to side. But so long as you're doing things and making progress forward and learning as you go, you'll ultimately come up with the right solution at the right time. I think that would probably be the biggest learning I have. Like, don't try and overplan. Get stuck in, get started, learn, iterate, make progress.
Yeah, nice. That's really cool. So now we've reached that part of the podcast where we get to flip the question. So John Steiner of Lion, what question do you have for me?
We've had some great chats about my observations of your business. And so one of the, because I like thinking about someone else's business.
I know,
right?
I'm careful. I'm going to give you a job soon. Or are you going to be on my board of advisors?
So I've got another one for you, more of a challenge slash a question.
Yeah.
And so, you know, your business is currently focused on business, mostly, and helping them. Quite often, you know, my observation of XLabs and participating in is who you're talking to are those who I'd call, at the very least, they're circular curious, if not converts to the cause. But ultimately, we need to create more converts. And I'm just wondering if there's an opportunity for a side business and education for you. So I've got kids who are 12 or 13 about to turn 13, coming up 17 in their head, and a son who's 11. And I don't know if we're necessarily teaching them circular principles. And so I wonder, you know, what opportunities do you think there might be to how we could educate youth, children, and use some of perhaps what you do with XLearn, for example, in schools or in education?
Yeah, it's a great question, John. Thanks for always thinking about circularity in the business and how we scale. I really liked your thinking. You were already starting to do like customer segmentation on our market, which was really cool. Funnily enough, I think like within the first kind of five workshops I ever ran on circular design, one of them was with Enviro Schools, and it was alongside EcoStore. And EcoStore wanted to create a closed loop for their packaging, their sugarcane plastic. It was a very expensive product, and obviously it was going through the recycling system and not getting recycled. So they wanted to engage schools in the conversation around plastic and our oceans and get them collecting and returning the plastic. So I actually ran circular economy workshops across Enviro Schools, and it was really cool. I actually have still kept the post-it notes that the kids drew of solutions, because they are probably some of the best drawings I've ever seen in workshops. And so simple. And I mean, I think the interesting thing with working with kids is they act, because they're pre-work, you know, it's before they've gone out into the workforce. So there's no indoctrination in corporate life whatsoever. And they just get it. They get that you got to work with nature, not against it. They're in, you know, nature every day, you'd hope. So yeah, that was the early days. And actually just recently with the Ministry for the Environment, I was part of the Young Enterprise Scheme that goes through high schools. So Ministry for the Environment has been partners with YES for an absolute age, and they run a climate hackathon with them as part of the YES program. They have to develop a business idea. And so I ran a circular economy workshop with those guys and a big hackathon over a weekend just down in Wellington. And it was super cool. Some of the amazing ideas. And I think that's a lot of hope. I mean, I see a lot of new startups playing in the space, people who are starting out business ideas straight out of school, straight out of high school, as well as universities. And this is the only kind of business that they want to run. They don't necessarily take up those graduate programs, John. Some of them obviously still do, but now they tend to start a business, and circular economy seems to be the flavor of the month for them.
That's awesome to hear you've really done your own enterprises, because that was going to be my initial idea for you. So there you go, you've really ticked that off.
Oh, yeah. But definitely like more, you know, I'd love the opportunity to grow that. And I, you know, you called out that online program, and to run that with, I think our next evolution with YES will be how do we integrate that program and scale that further so that every idea that comes out of Young Enterprise Scheme is a circular economy idea. That's the whole thing. It should be foundational. Hey, John, you're a real friend and part of the family at Circularity. So it's been such a pleasure having you here on the podcast, The Redesign of Everything, sharing so many good learnings. I know for so many of our listeners who are in your shoes, in, you know, FMCG industries, but also whether in the beverage industry, but thinking about the role of innovation, how they can move faster to solve some of these big challenges that we're facing, and how they can help their business become a force for good. I know you've just shared so many insights that they will just love. So thank you so much. Really, really appreciated.
No, that was our pleasure. Love it. Anytime.
Okay, well, there might be a part two if you liked it a lot. We might have to get you in the studio next time and when you're up in Auckland, and we can go for a beer afterwards.
That sounds good. Sounds awesome.
Cool. All right. Thank you, John. Catch you later.
Cheers. See ya.
Friends, thank you so much for joining us today, and a big thank you to our guest and our fantastic team producing the redesign of everything. For more information about circularity, the work that we do, and how we can help your organisation, head to circularity.co.nz or find us on our social media channels listed in the show notes. Please subscribe to the podcast and leave a review on whatever platform you are listening on. And until next time, let's redesign everything. This podcast is proudly brought to you by Circularity, a team of passionate circular strategists working with a new breed of businesses.
They don't see today's challenges as someone else's problem or the solutions as a utopian vision.
Simply put, that is why we're here, to help build capability, unlock new value, and co-design an extraordinary future together.
If you are wanting to level up your impact and are looking for a partner to support that journey, consider our advisory services. Get in touch via our website, circularity.co.nz.